Recorded live and in the middle of a donut party in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. This is So You Think You Can Danica.
Hello and welcome to So You Think You Can Danica. My name is Danica.
And my name is not. It's Devin. Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. How are you?
Yeah. You know, it's coming into spring.
Yeah.
So, I guess a young man's fancy turns to thoughts of dance.
Yes.
That's the old expression, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have anything to follow that up. This is
going to be a fun one, folks. We do not know quite how we're going to talk about this movie, but we have fortified ourselves with port.
Yes.
And donuts.
Yes.
So, let's do this thing.
All right. Is everybody strapped in?
Strap in.
Put your seatbelt on. Make sure that your skirt isn't in the car door. I don't know.
Oh, boy. Get your skirts out of the car doors, people.
This is a problem. I have had problems like that.
I've had pant leg in car door before. Exactly, it's not the same.
Yeah. No, no. I have like a one skirt that's kind of drapey, so I bring pieces of it in, but then I always forget like a piece, and I'm always like overly cautious about that last piece.
Mm.
Like, there's nothing bad that's gonna happen to it. It's just gonna, it might end up like dirty.
Yeah.
But I just want to make sure it's inside the car with me.
Yes. Well, I mean, that's mostly where your clothes should be.
I mean, I don't want to Martha Graham this so.
Oh, that's a curse. I'm gonna have to bleep that one.
Oh.
It's okay. We're good.
Sorry.
No, we're good. We're good.
I forgot.
Yeah, it's all right. I mean, we may eventually give up on the clean, but yeah. For now, I mean, honestly, to give up on the clean tag for all that jazz would be very helpful. This is a grown-ups, grown-up movie for
yes.
grown-ups.
It has a teen in it, but only one.
Oh, there's one teen.
One teen.
A teen who I wrote down in my notes. So his teenage daughter, who appears to be 14, draws him a picture of himself, and she has the crayon skills of a girl half her age.
That was just, I mean, that wasn't even the moment that there was too much, but that was one of the moments in the mountain of moments that I was like, do you know how children draw? Have you met a child? The answer is no.
Fair enough.
So I guess we can just launch into this. We are doing All That Jazz from 1979, which was a very different time.
A very different time, yes.
And it's directed and written by Bob Fosse. Correct me if I'm wrong, but
yeah.
I don't understand what planet he came from, but I mean, he gave our planet a lot of good stuff, and then he also did this.
Which, I mean, we're going to argue on this for
we
sure.
We are.
I really liked it. It was co-written by Fosse and Robert Allen Arthur.
Right. Okay, thank you.
Thanks to a very slow internet connection.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see what else Robert Allen Arthur wrote. Oh, that was the last thing he wrote.
Oh, yeah, because he was the one who got the posthumous Oscars.
Oh, right. Yeah. Oh, he wrote Warlock in 1959.
Oh.
He wrote The Lost Man in 69. Mm-hmm. So not a ton of film. Oh, Grand Prix?
I know none of these, but okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Grand Prix is a James Garner movie.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, we watched All That Jazz. It was on the list of things to watch as a dance movie about
yes.
dance.
Yes. I finally made that list that I've been promising for about 6 months.
Yep.
Excuse me. And I basically, my stipulations were a dance movie that revolved around dance. Because there is a very thin line between
love
dance
and hate.
Movies.
Sorry.
Between dance movies and musicals.
Yeah.
And while we love musicals, this is not the podcast for that.
No.
So, and I mean, even All That Jazz kind of tightrope walks that line.
Tightrope walks.
Yes.
Nice one.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we have some more suggestions from myself and IMDb and Google that we'll
the go Holy
through.
Trinity.
Yes.
Danica, IMDb, Google, and the Holy Google.
The Holy Goog.
We are recording this on Good Friday, so this is an excellent blasphemy that we've started our podcast with. Oh boy. Yeah. So for those of you who don't know what All That Jazz is, All That Jazz is a fever dream that Bob Fosse came up with when he had a heart attack. And it's about the time in his life where he was simultaneously editing his film Lenny.
Right.
And choreographing Chicago.
Oh.
Yeah. So he was doing both of those at the same time.
Okay.
So the movie that he's editing is supposed to be the Lenny Bruce picture.
Yeah.
And kind of Chicago-y, except not, but...
Chicago, but naked.
Yeah. But that was a thing. That was the thing about Chicago.
Yeah.
When it first came out, it was very sexy and like, this just went way, way over the top. So Fosse has made this movie, a fantasy autobiography, the self-indulgent mess of a movie.
There's literally a dance sequence called Hospital Hallucination.
Oh, so yeah.
It's like butting up against real life. Like it's his fantasy and real life just smooshed together all.
Yeah. Well, and part of the difficulty in talking about it is if we try and go through it chronologically, there is a chronological order to it, but it takes the fun out of the movie in a way.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, this is a movie that's not supposed to be linear, and I understand that. That's not the part I was angry about.
No, there are other parts for sure.
Yeah.
So before we get into that, I'll just talk about the cast real quick.
Yeah.
Roy Scheider plays Joe Gideon, who is the Fosse stand-in.
Mm-hmm.
Leland Palmer plays Audrey Paris, who is the Gwen Verdon stand-in.
Okay, yeah.
Anne Rankine plays Kate Jagger, who is the girlfriend.
Okay, yeah.
Audrey was the ex-wife. Cliff Gorman plays the actor playing the fake Lenny Bruce.
Yep.
Ben Vereen is in it as a TV host personality who shows up in the last third of the movie. That was so good. Erzabeth Foldy is Michelle, who's the daughter, right? Oh. The daughter's Michelle.
Yes.
I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's other people. There's people all through this movie where it's just like, oh, look at that New York actor.
Yeah. Like, this thing is star-studded. Mm-hmm. I think everyone just wanted even a bit role in it. Yes. So we'll definitely mention them.
And later? Jessica Lange as the angel.
Oh, Angelique.
Angelique.
I didn't know she had a name until literally the credits.
Yes. I just kept calling her the angel of death the whole time.
She is.
Right?
Spoilers.
Ooh. Is Roy Scheider Thanos? Is he in love with death?
Yes, he
there
is.
You go.
Because he literally, there was an entire scene where his doctor's like, I don't think he cares whether he lives or dies. And I'm like, he doesn't.
He doesn't. It's, yeah.
So like, he chain smokes, he pops pills, there's like eye drops going on. Like, he's just doing everything bad to his body every single day.
Mm-hmm.
And just to live this life, you know, of like, directing theater, editing a movie, you know, sleeping around with all these ladies.
Mm-hmm.
And like, inevitably his body gives up.
Yeah.
Surprise.
Yeah. Yeah. We're not going through chronologically, but
nope.
The end of the movie is Joe in a body bag, while Ethel Merman sings, "There's no business like show business." Like it's the portrait of a man who has been entitled his whole life and really buys into that. I think he bought into it, and I feel like there's parts of All That Jazz where he's just like, I shouldn't have bought into it. I shouldn't have done this. But I don't think he puts really the blame on himself in any way. But I also don't think he blames anybody other than show business. Right? Like, it's the machine that made him who he is in his eyes.
He thinks, like, that's what he has to do to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what's killing him.
Yeah. I'm just going to call him the Dustin Hoffman stand-in. The guy who's playing the Lenny Bruce character. There's so many great lines in this movie, but the one line that he says when when he's visiting Joe in the hospital.
Right.
And he says, you have, where is it here?
That's really the one time that you see it, see him out of that movie mm-hmm. that he's editing, that you see him actually connecting with Joe mm-hmm. because he recorded that scene and Joe's editing it for like months and months and months.
And it's all through his head all the time, yep. right? Yep. But yeah, he says, you have a deep-seated fear of being conventional,
mm-hmm.
which is, to me at least, there is definitely, I can identify with that. Like, oh, you don't want to be normal. Normal is death. You've got to be weird. You've got to embrace your weirdness or whatever. But yeah, there's a lot of little lines like that. And I think you have a deep-seated fear of being conventional. You don't want to just be like everybody else. You have to keep playing this role, even though this role is killing you, the role of the tortured genius who's full of life and so on and so forth while he's, you know, getting these deep, deep tissue massages from the nurse and drinking champagne and smoking a marijuana in the bathroom in his private hotel suite.
Yeah, or hospital suite. In the hospital, having champagne parties mm-hmm. with all the cast.
Fooling around with the second assistant editor in the bed. Oh boy, yeah, we're super not going in chronological order.
Nope, so there's no way.
If you were to give a summary of the movie,
yeah,
so we can kind of build off that framework.
Okay.
What would your summary be?
Okay. Well, I would say theater director takes on too much, doesn't reflect on anything in his life, no. and pays for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. He's got an ex-wife who he still has a seemingly good working relationship.
Yeah.
She really gets him. There's so many scenes where like the two of them have just been working together for so long that there's just like glances and they know exactly what the other person is thinking.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a girlfriend that he's cheating on. He's got a daughter. I really thought she was great. I thought the daughter was really good. I thought
Michelle
most
was great.
Of the performers were actually very good.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so those the three women in his life who kind of do their best to keep him on an even keel,
They try, but, I mean, he doesn't listen to anybody.
No. And he's choreographing and directing his new show, and across the street he's editing the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Fun fact, the guy, I've said his name already before, Cliff Gorman,
yep.
He played Lenny Bruce in the play that the movie Lenny was based on, and then that role was given to Dustin Hoffman for the movie. So then when they did this movie, they gave Cliff Gorman the Dustin Hoffman part.
Wow.
Right?
That's like 8 levels of meta.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, he's going back and forth between doing those things. And he's always flashing to his fantasy world with Angelique, where it's mm-hmm. Either his apartment that's in a shambles or the stage that's in a shambles, and he keeps talking about...
It felt like a green room to me, because his life is in the theater, and he was surrounded by props and costumes, and he was at, like, the makeup mirror.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm going to give you my theory.
Yeah, yeah. Go ahead.
So, because the movie's not linear, and you saw Angelique throughout the movie, kind of segueing one scene to another, you also heard the comedian's routine, which was about death.
The Kubler-Ross
stuff?
So,
the not subtle part of this movie. Ha ha. It's all not subtle.
Yeah.
I think the Angelique parts are literally just at the end for him.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
When he is dying. And now, because what I know about, like, near-death experiences, you can have, years in a second, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, your brain just doesn't tell you the time. So I imagine that he's having that conversation as he is dying.
Right. Like, the whole movie is in and of itself a kind of your life is flashing before your eyes.
It is.
Yeah. That's I think that's a great read of that film, especially because Angelique's all the way through. The other read, I suppose, or another read, would be he's always having conversations with Angelique because he's fascinated with death. Because at the end, it's just like he didn't allow himself to live. He's fascinated with death. Death is the only reality.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be that he's always, when he's daydreaming, thinking about death.
Okay.
But I actually like your interpretation a little bit better. But at the same time, he is always thinking about death. He's chain smoking. He's popping pills. He's losing track of where he's smoking so much that he smokes in the shower in the opening montage. Oh,
that was so gross. Oh, yeah. And there's this one scene where he does have an angina attack, and the doctor who's checking his heartbeat is smoking behind him.
And coughing worse than
coughing,
he is.
Hacking. They're both smoking. And I was like, okay, I know smoking was still like cool back then, and the government was still telling you that it wasn't going to kill you, but my God.
Yeah. I will say, for a 40, Rorschach was born in 1932. Mm-hmm. That movie was released in 79, so he's probably filming it at the age of 46. For a 46-year-old man, he is in good shape.
Yeah,
he and
was.
He had to get into good shape to do this movie.
Yeah, especially since he wasn't a dancer.
Yeah, to try and keep up with the professional dancers, all of whom are amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I would say 20% of why I like the movie is Roy Scheider. Okay. I really like Roy Scheider. I think he should have been a bigger movie star than he was. Mm-hmm. I think I was watching Sorcerer. He's in a movie called Sorcerer that's... It's excellent, but it's weird. It is about truckers, like a bunch of down on their life truckers driving nitroglycerin through the Brazilian jungle.
What?
Yeah. It's based off The Wages of Fear, which is a French movie, and they remade it in the 70s. But I've thought he would have been like a top tier movie star in France, because yeah. He's got like a very European kind of look and not a Hollywood movie star look.
Yeah, even back in the 70s he didn't.
No, but he has a career in the 70s because he's so good, and that's when character actors could kind of be movie stars. Mm-hmm. But I always like Roy Scheider, and just to see him just go, oh yeah, I'm gonna do this. I'm committing 100% to this movie right now, no matter how ridiculous and weird it is. Am I going to sing Bye Bye, a disco version of Bye Bye Love?
Yeah, for like 200 minutes.
Forever? Yes, I will. And I will do it in a sparkly vest. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I will do it with women who are dressed up like the Visible Woman and Ben Vereen.
Yeah. That, my brain still wants to say Wolverine every time you say that. I'm so
the
sorry,
the savage
Ben.
Ben Vereen. He's the best at what he does, and what he does is sing and dance.
Lounge music. Take that. Flip, flip. Lounge music. Anyway. Okay. So I will say this. Everyone in the cast did give it 110%.
Yeah.
I respect that. But it was too much for me.
Yeah. It is yeah. a lot.
Every dance sequence went on far too long. I would have cut them all
really?
By about a third.
Wow.
All
even the, what was it called? Erotica?
Erotica, yes.
I loved Erotica.
I really liked it. For like 3 minutes too long.
Fair enough.
I got the point. They're naked. I get it.
Oh, see, that wasn't it for me. I really liked like what he was doing. I liked what Fosse, the actual dude, was doing mm-hmm. with that. Where very clearly Fosse, like, you watch Chicago, you watch anything that Fosse's done. He is kind of obsessed with sex, but he could never do that on Broadway. But he can do it in the safe confines of a film. So why don't I parodize myself a little bit, but also like put together like there was just so many like jibes at the theater establishment, like when the two white women had their hands on the black dancer and they were and the producers were just like
yeah.
Or the scene with the two every dance move the two men did, the shapes of their bodies were so good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just loved all the shapes he was doing. Some of the two principal dancers in that, where they were like, okay, yes, we're pelvis to pelvis and shaking our hips, was a little bit much, but I liked everything else about that. And I really liked how it transitioned from a very traditional Fosse stage number to oh, and now they're taking their clothes off and smoke, 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 smoke. And
I love the smoke, smoke guy.
And then Joe with the flashlights shining on them. I thought the music in that scene was good. I would say that was the only one that I wouldn't touch. I would agree with you on every other one. Mm-hmm. But I just steamrolled you, so please tell me about more of the dance stuff.
I did like some of the dancing. It was just too extra for me. Mm. And I know what they were trying to do, and I was kind of fighting myself just watching it, and I was like, just get into it. It's weird. It's going to be weird. It's going to be out there. You can do this. And my brain was just logicking everything, and it was really shutting it down, right?
Fair enough.
It just bugged me, you know, like it was very good, and the techniques was very good, but it was too long. All of them are too long. I would have cut that movie down by about half an hour, because 2 hours felt like three.
Wow. Okay. It definitely felt like 2 hours for me. To me, the end scene it really does go off the rails, but in a way that I found really entertaining. But that last number really tests the audience patience.
Yep.
And if you aren't bought into the movie, that'll just check you right out.
Mm-hmm. And I did.
Yeah.
I did. Like, I mean, you left when the doctor was checking his watch at the end, but I was like, I have been doing that for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Even if it's not 10 minutes, it feels like 10 minutes.
Oh, absolutely. Right? Would you say that... Okay, I will say the other two scenes that I would be curious of your opinions on, the other two dance scenes at the very least. The scene where he's dancing with the ex-wife and they're having a conversation about the show while they're doing the choreography, I didn't think that was too long.
No. Not that one. Mostly because something else was happening, so there were layers. Like, they were talking as well.
Right.
And I felt that there was a quicker pace.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Paul kept trying to go, you know, leave them. I love that. So I feel so bad for Paul, but I also don't care about Paul. No one cares about Paul.
Yeah, no one cares about Paul.
and so he was just like, maybe I'll just let you two have some privacy. And they're like, shut up, Paul. Play the piano, Keep playing. Paul.
Yeah.
That was amazing. I loved that because it did exemplify their relationship and how, you're right, how they still connect and how she was also... kind of showing off. I mean, she was right before he came in, she kind of did a high kick and pulled something or at least was hurting, and she saw him and she went, nope, I'm good, everything is fine, I'm still good, I can play a 24-year-old, which I mean, like, you have a 14-year-old daughter, you're probably not even close to 24, and I respect that, but
if you have a dancer's body, a lot can be done on stage, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. But I definitely know that was part of the stretch of the story. It's like, she's playing a 24-year-old, and
I really liked that scene for a number of reasons, most of which you've already said, but I think one of the things that you didn't say was, I like that it felt like the dialogue and the choreography were two threads that he was like weaving, and they wouldn't really work without the other. And I was like, is he choreographing to the beats in the song, or is he choreographing to the beats in the dialogue? And that was what I was thinking when I was watching that scene, because there were so many parts where a move would be punctuated by a line. And I was just like, or is he giving them delivery of line based on like just the permutations of everything that was going on in that scene? I really liked.
Yeah.
I really did like that a lot. And I guess the other, I would say the other choreographed part that I didn't think was too long was the girlfriend and the daughter putting on a show for him in the apartment.
Okay.
I thought that one was good. I mean, you could have trimmed it a little bit.
So maybe, perhaps my comment was the big scene.
Oh, God, the big
scene. And
scenes.
So when there's two dancers, that's okay.
Yeah. What did you think of the scene where he's choreographing and talking with the daughter?
I had feelings about that.
Yeah, I really wanted to know about that.
As as a man who A, sleeps with tons of dancers, B, uses dance as foreplay and bases and has it very sex focused, I felt very uncomfortable that he was dancing with his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
I realize that's probably not what the message was. However, A, either he, like, I don't think he had any intentions with her, but A, is he training her to be susceptible to a predator like himself?
Oh, okay.
Or I don't even know if I have a B. I mean, that might be part of it. Like, she's 14. She's, you know, she's young. She wants his acceptance. She wants to see him. She wants to be his daughter. Mm-hmm. And so I was super uncomfortable with all of that.
Interesting. I read it very differently. And I guess my two points of distinction, which I'm now wondering if they are even really relevant, would be that I don't see him using dance as foreplay. I see him using power as foreplay and his position as the choreographer. Like, I don't necessarily, like, when he's directing people, I don't really see a lot of, like, oh, and after we do this dance number, we're going to have sex. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was actually, there was definitely a read on it that I could have gone, oh, this could go really badly. But the way they were interacting was different than the way he interacted with the Gwen Verdon character, the ex-wife.
Kate. Oh, no, Audrey.
Yeah, Audrey or Kate. Any of the times that he's dancing with any of the other ones, where it was like, oh, we're going to have this conversation. But also, it was this weird combination of, we're having a father-daughter conversation, but also I need to work and you are a body that I can manipulate to work. Mm-hmm. That was an interesting frisson. Of like, what are the two relationships going on right now? And I guess the sexual aspect wasn't as forefront for me, but I could tell when it was going on, you had thoughts. Yep. And I wanted to know what they were.
Yeah.
It's a weird scene. I think they play it okay. Like, I think there's genuine father-daughter affection there, but it's a weird power dynamic to have on the screen, especially considering the whole rest of the conversation happens while he is carrying her.
Yeah, he continues to carry her out to the car, which is also very
weird. It was weird. It was a weird choice.
Like, oh, we're late. How is that quicker? Put her down. Let her put her coat on because it's pouring rain. Let her put her shoes on. She's got her point shoes on.
No, reverse piggyback her into the car.
That was so weird. I just...
So strange.
Yeah. So, like, I understand what you mean about power. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. He used power. I do feel that he... maybe not dance as, like, a physical act, but definitely that system. I mean, he does have the power, but he is also... I feel like when he's auditioning women, he is auditioning women.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the overlap for me comes in.
Absolutely. And that's very reasonable. Like, he's like, okay, so especially in the opening audition number where, like, I couldn't believe how many people were on that stage.
Oh my God. It was like probably over 100.
Just full.
Yeah.
Full of people.
I don't know. They had space.
And then whittling everyone down. And then, yeah, here's the five women that I've selected because they'd be good for the show, and the one who will be good enough for the show that I also want to sleep with.
Yep. Yeah, and then when he was trying to leave to go to the editing suite, he literally said, here's the five women I want, the men I'll decide later.
Yeah.
Because they are not even secondary. I mean, they're just his last thought. He doesn't care.
Yeah, because he is who he is, right? And I guess that's the nut. Like, that's the nut of the movie. Because we are two different people and we are who we are. Oh, can I also just say, I'm really interested that when the two men were dancing together and the two women were dancing together in the erotica section, I was like, oh, I bet Danica is liking this because I know how important, like, non-heteronormative stuff is for you. And that's really the only non-heteronormative stuff in the movie.
Yep.
But I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
No, I mean, I thought for 1979 it was excellent.
Like, yeah.
You know, kudos, right?
It didn't play for shock value.
No. It was literally like, you know, we may be in a relationship or we are dancers who are comfortable dancing with dancers of our same gender, mm-hmm. which was great.
Yeah.
What I did love was that one time that Joe was with that story about Joe with two women. That was absolutely my favorite part because of the punchline, so to speak. It's not a joke, but it's the last line. And so he's living with these two women, you know, they're sleeping together, they're having a relationship. So basically it's a throuple. And one of the women leaves and she leaves this note and she says, you know, I can't live without you. You know, so I don't want to share you anymore. So I'm just leaving. Like, I can't deal with it. And he was just like, yeah, so she left me. And then he's talking to Angelique, right?
Yeah, he's talking to Angelique and he says, it was nice to know that she felt that way or whatever. Yeah.
And Angelique says, what makes you think she was talking about you?
Yeah, what do you think the note's for you? And hit just the complete, like, oh, I didn't even consider that.
Yeah, I loved that.
Yeah.
Because just that little twist.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, brilliant.
Which brings me to the conceit, I think, of the film.
Yeah.
Which is, do you have to like Joe to like the movie?
I didn't like Joe. And I also didn't love the movie. I thought it was okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if making Joe likable would have been a better situation because he's not a good person.
You couldn't do the movie if you liked it.
No. Like, we shouldn't like Joe.
Right.
He's not a bad character, but he is kind of a poisonous character. Like, mm-hmm, he can't take care of himself. He can't take care of others. And so... Excuse me. So you are, as a viewer, supposed to say, like, you are not living life, you know, to the fullest. I mean, you're living life to the fullest in the exact wrong way.
Yeah. 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 It's, I guess, maybe the question is not, do you have to like Joe to like the movie? I guess because I'm so, and I guess we as a culture are so used to the poisonous genius, the poisonous male genius who is abusive but gets results, and so that is a trope that nowadays can be a bit overdone. I don't know if it was as overdone 40 years ago when this movie first came out, but we're not watching it 40 years ago, we're watching it now.
Yeah, so it's a very different context in 2019.
And my perspective is, I don't like Joe. I don't. I like Roy Scheider's performance. And I like that he's a complicated character who understands what he's doing is wrong, but for whatever reason can't help himself. And I think that as much as he's still in love with himself, like, Fosse's in love with the Joe character, but he also is just like, he's also terrible and he can't let go of the ego that is necessary to bring about change in his own life, right? Like, he's still obsessed with his image and his power, and that's what's driving him to death.
Yep.
And I think that we see so many images of the tortured male abusive genius who's so hard on himself so much, but I personally thought that this was an anti-sympathetic take on that character that you often kind of gets a pass. I feel like he gets a pass, but not really in all that jazz. But that's my perspective as a guy who's used to seeing guys like that buy into that whole power thing. And I wanted to know what you thought about that.
Sure. Well, I definitely felt that Joe didn't check off all the marks of that trope, which was nice, which was refreshing. While he wasn't, of course, physically abusive, he was emotionally abusive because he would basically use women for sex and consistently cheat on both Audrey and Kate. And he also... Kate slept with someone else and he got mad at her.
Yeah.
And I actually wrote a note about that and I said, how dare you? Like, he has no right
that,
because he's going off. He's basically keeping her on a short leash because she loves him, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And the best thing for all of the women in his life is to leave. Even Michelle.
Mm.
It's just to leave him because...
And I feel like
Mm-hmm.
Again, I can't remember the name of the character, but the ex-wife character.
Audrey.
Audrey, thank you. I literally am just remembering, like...
It's okay.
Relationships. I don't, like, I had a hard time remembering Joe's name, for Pete's sake.
Yeah. Well, I wrote it down as Joey first, because that's what they called him originally, yeah. But then it was Joe for most of the movie, so...
Yeah. Mm. But I think she's the one who, like, because she got a good enough distance away from him that was still beneficial to her. They have a good working relationship. They're the kind of people who are better as exes than they are together.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, in general, getting distance from Joe is the right call.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, the best thing that could have happened for the show as a whole is for him to die and for John Lithgow's character to take over as director. Because even though he definitely will just take advantage of that opportunity, he definitely still seemed like a healthier character.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is interesting because John Lithgow's character is based on another director who Fosse had a antagonistic relationship with.
Yep.
But he doesn't come off as a bad person.
No.
And I think that's really a level of self-awareness in a filmmaker that the people you don't like aren't necessarily bad people. I think the person who comes off the worst is the songwriter, who's very clearly just this idiot.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's a cartoon, basically. Yeah. Like, he's just all, like, slapping and jumping around and, like, oh,
yeah.
Like
that. Who is apparently based on the guy who wrote the music for Pippin, and he had a terrible relationship when he was doing Pippin.
Yeah.
But everybody else who's based on a real person are kind of real. Like, they're not caricatures of people that, you know, oh, I don't like these people, so we're going to pastiche them on screen, and I'm also not going to fully absolve them of the things that I don't like. Like, they're real people. Even if they're, you know, in two scenes like Lithgow is, or have one line of dialogue like Wally Shawn.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe I put down in my notes, quote, young, unquote, Wallace Shawn.
Yep, he had more hair.
he had more hair, not on the top of his head,
nope.
But like coming out the side of his head.
Yeah, like they really exaggerated that for some reason.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was actually quite fun to see some of the faces in this movie because like Wallace Shawn showing up, I think the attraction of being in a Bob Fosse film for everyone, even non-dancers, was probably very irresistible.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, if you can get one line in a Bob Fosse movie, sure, do it. Whatever.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how big a star you are then. You want to work with him.
No. And I think, Lithgow was kind of becoming like a film actor at that point in time.
Mm-hmm.
Wallace Shawn's just a New York theater actor and writer, yeah. Right? And then CCH Pounder as the night nurse. I was like, where did you come from?
She was a good surprise.
Yeah. Yeah. Gosh. Yeah. Oh man. So I don't know. We're good. Is there anything that you wanted to talk about? Anything more that you wanted to bring up or talk about?
Well, I mean, I definitely want to reiterate what pretty much all the reviews that we found on IMDb say is pretentious, it is snobby, it is like, and the last scene, the dance number, which goes on for a million years, is Fosse basically just masturbating all over the screen. Like, it was just so much, it was too much, and like, I don't care who you are.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just glad that he was the only one dying and no one else had to witness that.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's just his brain going, I'm great. I'm so great. Everyone cheers for me.
That's his brain shutting down, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is a bit much. It actually reminds me a little of the last big dance sequence in The Wiz, which I also think is a little too big and goes on a little bit too long. So when I was watching, I'm like, oh, no, don't do it. Don't do it. And then they did it anyway. Yeah, it is a bit much. But I don't know. I like a little bit of over-the-top. I think he does it with a self-aware. I think he's self-aware of how over the top it is.
I hope so, because if he's not, like, that's very obvious.
Sorry, go ahead.
It's a sledgehammer to the face.
Yeah, he's so self-aware with the rest of the movie, that can't be where he goes, and now I'm earnest and sincere. Like, there's no way that that's possible.
Nothing about that was sincere.
No, nothing. Not at all.
It was glitz, it was glamour, and it was Broadway.
Oh, God, it was so much. It was so much. Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the things I liked about the movie is that there's so many scenes where multiple things are going on. Like, literally, multiple things are going on. When he's stumbling through the hospital and the Kubler-Ross monologue is going on. And he's like, first then he's in the boiler room with the water all over the floor. Yeah. And what's his line where he looks up? I wrote it down because it was so good. What's the matter? Don't you like musical comedy? And then he goes into the autopsy suite and the death stuff is playing. And he starts talking to the brains and the eyes. I loved that.
Okay. So, for me, I was logicking everywhere. Fosse breaks the fourth wall consistently.
Yes,
like,
yes, yes,
constantly,
yes.
Constantly. Okay. So, he goes into the autopsy room. And there's literally two doctors over a corpse. And they see this guy. I'm just like, why aren't you doing anything? You're terrible at your jobs. And so he doesn't get kind of like sat down until there's this really nice like guy in the cafeteria that just hangs out with him.
The janitor who sings Smile, Smile, Smile.
Which was horrifying in its own way because I understand he is dying and we sing Smile and it's funny and juxtaposition. Okay, so when he bashed his head against the wall and then he was sliding the blood on the other wall, I was like, why is this happening? Why is this happening?
Oh, interesting.
And then it got worse.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So he finds this dying woman moaning and groaning. No,
it's
so
bad.
And he goes up to her and he kisses her.
Yeah.
And then she dies happy. I mean, what are you doing?
Because I saw so much of that as a dream sequence, like I couldn't tell you what was real and what wasn't. I chose to look at that as more symbolic of not being as afraid of death anymore. There's a dying woman in the hospital and he literally embraces and kisses and welcomes death into his life.
Okay.
As something that he had been obsessed with for so long and obsessed with in a terrified way. Now he's like, oh, I'm at a point now where I'm comfortable with this.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, absolutely. It could also be read a very different way, where he's just a madman wandering through a hospital, hugging a woman who's dying.
Yeah.
Right?
With no hospital staff to help anyone.
Oh,
like,
man.
He got down to the boiler room without anyone stopping him. I'm just like, this is the worst hospital.
Yeah.
And he's rich, so he can afford good health care in 1979, and it's still not enough.
Yeah.
So, yes, okay, I definitely should have looked at more things as metaphors, but I just couldn't.
That's fair.
I was looking at it as real, and I was just like, what is happening?
Yeah, I feel like the metaphor becomes the text becomes subtext the longer the movie goes on,
yeah.
And it becomes harder to differentiate what's real and what's not, especially like, am I dead? Like when he writes, am I dead on the pad?
Yeah.
And she goes, you're alive. I'm like, I can't take that at face value.
No, because he came out of it, but then he died. And like, I'm just like, so did he not come back? Like
yeah.
at all?
Yeah.
There's real life and his fantasy life. You're right. At the start, they're pretty close together already, like from minute one. And then they just start to mesh into each other slowly. And then by the middle, honestly, not even the end, by the middle, you're just like, I don't even know what's real anymore.
Yeah, the last third at the very least is
yeah.
just... But again, I've been waiting for that last third for so long where Dream Joe is directing the women in his life talking about how bad it's going to be for him and them and please come back to us. And then the other Joe is in the hospital bed and he's like, you missed your line. Like, it's just, it's the perfect amount of weird for me. The guy who loves David Lynch and like all that kind of stuff. And I get that not everybody likes that, but I was just like, I want to watch a whole movie that is just this.
No.
Yeah.
I definitely did like their song and dances.
Yeah,
I thought it was really
great.
Cool at the end where like they all had different costumes in the three dances, and then at the end when they were all singing again, the other two women had their costumes back mm-hmm. on. So they had three different costumes again.
Yeah. Yeah. I and I mean, that. Like, the girlfriend's wearing a cabaret-inspired costume. Like, they're three yeah. different eras of his life. I love the fan dance routine where the fan dance girls are like moving in a circle around his hospital bed, and then they're like hiding the hearse that the three girls are driving away on top of.
It was a white hearse.
A white hearse. So good.
Like, I tried to look at the minutia because the big picture was just pissing me off. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, you know, I like the one fake red nail on all the dancers in the fan dance. The
two-tone kinds, lipstick?
Yeah, like it was what? Red on top and blue on the bottom. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there was something else with their makeup, but I thought it was fascinating.
Yeah.
But yeah, if I focused on everything, it was too much. So I just tried to focus on details.
Well, yeah, because I mean, everything that I watched, and I guess it was because I was so tuned into the symbolism, I was like, what does the one red nail mean? Is the two-tone nail, is the two-tone lip gloss or lipstick supposed yeah. to be, like, is it supposed to be blue? Like, are they supposed to be kind mm-hmm. of bluish in the face? Like, they're death or they're dead as well? Like, I just kept like, what does this mean? What does this mean? What does this mean? I loved the fake white, we talked about this off mic, but the fake white nails under the white mesh gloves.
Yeah.
And then the shot of the white mesh glove immediately juxtaposed with the safety net while he's walking on the tightrope.
Wow. Okay, yeah, all right.
Yeah, like all of those little things, I was just like, bing, 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 bing. It was like I pulled the lever at a slot machine. It was just like, symbolism, fill up your cup with tiny symbolism coins. We didn't mention Max Wright as the producer of the film, the dad from Alf.
Right, yes.
Where he comes to the hospital. My favorite scene is when he comes to the hospital and is trying to convince him that it's a hit movie. And then he says, what are they saying on TV? And then you watch the television review of the movie as Max Wright is talking over it to kind of like, to counteract. Oh, it's going to make 3-4 million opening weekend, no problem. While she's just like, I give this a half a balloon.
Yeah.
But that's another one of those multiple things are happening at the same time things.
There was a lot of that, and I didn't love it. Anytime there was, like, a television screen and people talking or two people talking, like, I understand why, but I couldn't do it. I'm the type of person who can't, like, read while the television's on, this was bad
that,
for me.
Oh, God, that would have been hard. totally not a dance movie question. Do you like Robert Altman? Do you like Robert Altman movies? Because he does, like, overlapping dialogue a lot.
I honestly can't remember. I know I've seen Altman films. I couldn't even tell you which. I know he has many, but I literally couldn't even name one.
MASH. Nashville.
I haven't seen MASH the movie.
Oh.
No.
That would be an interesting one. Did you watch the TV show MASH?
Some of it, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I haven't seen, like, the full one because it was long before, like, you know, it was before me. But I've seen parts of it, and, like, I probably saw it. Some reruns at some point.
I think MASH would be interesting because you have background of MASH. That's how I came to MASH. When I was a kid, we watched MASH after, like, the news was on. The news was on at 6, and MASH would come on at 6:30. Local news was 6, and MASH was 6:30. And we had to be done dinner by the time MASH was on.
Oh, my younger brother,
when he was 3, he would just start shouting, "Copters! Copters!" Which was his name for MASH.
Oh.
So we watched MASH all the time. And then Brendan and I, my middle brother Brendan and I, watched the movie MASH, and we were like, oh, okay.
Yeah. From everything I know, it is not the same animal.
It isn't, but... It's a really interesting comparison. And again, like, it's 70s. Like, Elliot Gould, Donald Sutherland. like, 70s. But yep. in a way that I think is really interesting. Not nearly as over the top as this.
No.
It's also very masculine because it's men doctors in the Korean War, right?
Yeah. Not many ladies.
No. Only Hot Lips Houlihan.
Yep.
You find out why her name's Hot Lips in the movie.
That's good. I'll see it eventually, I'm sure. Like,
fair
it's
enough.
It's not something I've pursued. But yeah, I don't know. Well, thank you for telling me that, because now I don't know if I'll pursue many Altman films. But I know he's very good, people have told me.
It's just, he does like the overlapping dialogue. There's things, it's either in MASH or Nashville, where he had everybody on a mic.
Oh.
And was just like, go!
No.
And then he would, like, fix, he would kind of play with the recording in post and, like, overlap stuff. It's intense.
I'm that one
might
of
be
those,
too much. Nashville's is, probably too much.
Yeah, I'm one of those people who, like, I generally don't want to talk during viewing.
Mm-hmm.
Not because I'm being a jerk, but because I will miss information. Like, mm-hmm. And so I try to be more empathetic to the person I'm watching with because they are there and we can rewind to television. It's
yes,
fine.
Yes.
But it took me a long time to realize that I was doing that. So I try to just focus and then say, did I miss anything?
Mm-hmm.
But I can't do two things at once.
Yeah, it's totally fair.
So this was a lot because I would try to listen to one of them and it would be overrun by the other one. And then I just couldn't listen to either. And so I just sat there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of went back and forth. Like I was trying to, I was just like, whatever hit me was what I would, it's like listening to the ocean. Whatever hits you is what you get from that scene.
Okay.
Or what
okay.
I got from that scene. All anyway. Right. Yeah. So, I guess...
Yeah.
So, you didn't hate it, but you didn't like it. Is that fair?
Yeah. I'm right. Like, it's a very middling film for me. I am glad I saw it because it is a classic for a reason. And it's one of those films that is on film lists and people say, like, oh, you gotta see it one day. And that's totally fine. It is a one watch for me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't intend to ever see it again. Who knows, 25 years from now, I might see it again. I don't know. But at this point, I am content with never seeing it again.
Totally get that. one of the things that you were saying when you were doing some of your research that really struck me was, oh, the background on the movie is more interesting than the actual movie. If I were to get this movie on Criterion, would you want to watch some of the, like, backstage documentaries / special features about the movie?
I would.
Yeah.
Because it is such an event of a film that I want to know. Yes, I would be more interested in how it was made rather than just being dazzled. I guess I didn't used to be this kind of person, but now I do like digging.
Mm-hmm.
I did want to be an actress at one point, so I did some background work like a decade ago. But it kind of twigged something in my brain that when I watch media, I pay attention more to the background now, not just terrible background actors that aren't doing their job, because that's also funny for me. But you know, like just scenery and why they did the shots and stuff. So I'm not a person that really can dig deep into metaphors and story stuff, but I like the technicality.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really, really liked this movie. I am considering getting, like, the fancy Criterion version of it, because I would definitely watch this movie again, because there's so much going on. I feel it is the kind of movie that, like a rose, God's perfect creation, will open up more and more that I watch it.
And I see it as an onion.
Fair enough.
Sorry you gave me that
one. No, it's a good one. Listen, I will keep pitching them. You keep knocking them out of the park, baby. okay, so.
Yeah.
In conclusion.
Yes.
Would you recommend this movie to people who like movies?
Some people. It's a very small group, I think. It's not, hey, do you like movies? Like, it's not something I'd recommend to everybody.
Yeah, fair enough.
So, big answer is no. Small answer is yes, some people.
Would you recommend this movie to people who like dance?
Yes. Because even though they went on for too long, there was very good technicalities in the dance. I would probably recommend dance scenes. Like, say you have the DVD, we watch certain dances.
Mm,
mm-hmm. Or if, like, we're just at their house or something, I would say, let's go to YouTube and just watch this one thing.
Fair enough.
Because, like, one of those is probably manageable, but I feel like asking someone to sit down for 2 hours, even with the amount of dancing in the movie, it's a lot.
Mm, it's fair. Yeah, I don't know. I guess a third bonus question that would not be asked normally. Does this make you more likely or less likely to watch Fosse Verdon?
Actually, less.
Yeah, I was thinking it might.
Yeah. I was very excited when I heard that the show was being made, mostly because of the cast. Like, it's Michelle Williams and... Sam Rockwell. Like, he's great. But it also might be... I watch it and I go, I actually hate Bob Fosse as a human. So I don't want to do that.
Fair enough. I mean, I do really want to watch it. And I think it would be interesting, just like, not as a So You Think You Can Danica thing. No. Just like as a, hey, so let's like watch the first episode and what did you think? But yeah, like I was like, ooh, I wonder if this makes you less likely to watch it now. Which is a totally reasonable reaction to how much... how strong feelings you had about this movie.
Yeah. As a choreographer, no question. He's wonderful. God, he's as so a director, great. No. Stop him. Someone contain him.
I watched... I really like Lenny Bruce a lot. So I watched Lenny years ago now. It's weird.
Yeah.
And it's also very out of order as well. But a lot of that is the editing. There's a story that some of the pacing doesn't really work. So they kind of made the pacing work better by editing certain things together. So it's a little bit nonlinear too. Dustin Hoffman does a weird Lenny Bruce impression. And Lenny Bruce, speaking of like toxic dudes, Lenny Bruce, right?
Yep.
Like,
oh yeah.
I find him fascinating, but super weird. Anyway, that was another movie tangent.
Oh, not a problem. Yeah, no, I am glad that we do this because it does enable me to watch films that I may never have seen. Mm-hmm. So I like being pushed out of my comfort zone, rather.
And I like pushing you. I mean, joining you.
Wow, rude.
A little rude, maybe. Maybe a little rude. Anything else you want to say?
No, I am happy and content. Oh. Is there anything you wanted to say?
How did you like your port?
Oh, right. It's good. Yeah, I like the little glass you gave me and it's very nice and sweet.
10-year-old tawny port.
Yeah.
It's nice.
Yes, I would, 10 out of 10, I would pour it again.
Yeah, I have nothing else to say about the movie, so.
No.
We can wrap up.
All right. So you can find us on the interwebs at sytycdanica.wordpress.com. We don't have a Twitter, but we do use the hashtag sytycdanica.
That's right. You
can, sorry, I mess up spelling my literal own name, so it's embarrassing for only me.
I'm sorry. I caught her eye and it's gone. Like, it's just gone off the rails. I'm going to look straight at the microwave and she can continue to talk about her social media applications.
Okay. So you can find me on Twitter at Danica Here. Here it is. DanicaHere.
You can find me on Twitter at Dr_teeth like a Muppet.
All right. We will talk to you next time.
Bye. That was fun, dude!
That was a lot of fun.
That was fun. So You Think You Can Danica is recorded by Danica LeBlanc and Devin R. Bruce and is produced by Devin R. Bruce and Danica LeBlanc. Our theme music is You Can Dance by Steve Combs, who has even more excellent pop music at the Free Music Archive. Thanks for listening!